Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the January 31 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week can be found online, listened to on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Don't forget that coming up on the 5th day of March, you can join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for the 29th annual All Day Ag Outlook. That starts early in the morning on Tuesday, the 5th day of March. Buy your tickets. They're just $30 right now online at willag.org. We'll have all of our regular on-air analysts, a dozen folks for you to talk to. Plus, Eric Snodgrass will be there with the weather forecast, and Murray Wise will join us to talk about agricultural land values. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace for this week. Dale Durkles is here. He's with AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds joins us from Windsor, Illinois. And Sean Hackett, who's the president of Hackett Financial Advisors out of Boca Raton, Florida, is on the line. Let's get a list of items that you'd like to talk about today. We'll start with you, Dale Durkles.
Well, I think the thing that's on everybody's minds, your listeners included, are how the negotiations between China and the U.S. are going at this point and how that picture might unfold. The other thing that continues to be on my mind is, have we seen commodity prices in general start this turn back higher once again after going through a number of months of being sideways to lower?
Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting.
Yeah, I think in addition to those topics, it'd be interesting to see what the other analysts think whenever we start talking about, what's acreage look like with the price ratio that we're currently looking at, first of all. And then second of all, depending on how the talks go with the Chinese, I'd be interested to hear the other analysts' take as well on what kind of exports we could potentially see the rest of the marketing year on a best case scenario, maybe on a worst case scenario as well.
And finally, we'll turn to you, Sean Hackett from Boca Raton and Hackett Financial Advisors. Before I get to your list of items, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company?
We've been in business for 11 years. Our primary focus is using capital flows in ag markets that we have developed an algorithm called the smart money algorithm that we utilize to help tell us when is the smart money betting big on the markets going higher or lower. And we use that modulation to help make buy recommendations and sell recommendations, a whole host of other indicators that we've utilized over the years. And so we really feel by ourselves can't know everything that's going on in the world, but we do know collectively. If you can measure the smartest people out there who know more about the business than anybody correctly, we should have a pretty good track record in helping farmers make better hedging decisions. And that's really what our whole mission is and why we exist.
And what are the topics you'd like to cover for the day?
I think the two important topics where it's on our mind is that there's a potential here for a major breakout in the Brazilian real. It's a very important currency. We haven't had anything good going on with the Brazilian real for a long time. But when you look at a correlation coefficient of grain prices to the Brazilian real over the last 15 to 20 years, it's an 85% correlation coefficient. So it's real important that if this breakout above 27 holds and we enter a major uptrend, it could really change the complexion of the grain markets, because obviously Brazil is a major, major competitor for us, and this would help us compete with them on a much more level playing field. And the other thing is on our mind is corn is at a 50-year low in historical volatility, which is extraordinary that in these crazy times that we have the corn market sitting there with such a low volatile price range. So we look at that as something that can't continue, won't continue, and will break significantly either up or down. And one needs to be very mindful of that and make sure they're prepared should that market wake up and do something maybe greater than anyone thinks it can do.
I want to start with the Brazilian real. Of course, if that were to strengthen, that would make soybeans, other exports from Brazil, more expensive on the world market. Do you have fundamental reasons why the real should strengthen?
Well, we had a big election last year. We transitioned from a very poor government over to the current gentleman. His name is Bolsonaro. And he came in with a whole bunch of new economic policies to help firm up the economy, improve the balance sheet, and it's attracting capital again. If you look at a company called JBS, which is one of the biggest companies that's listed in Brazil, ever since the elections took place, that stock has doubled after going sideways for 3 or 4 years, saying that some money is really starting to go into the stock market of Brazil and back into the country. And their economy actually showing some of the best economic numbers in quite some time. So we really feel that the political change that took place this October is really a fundamental long-term shift that's driving the real higher. We think it could be a long-term trend here.
Turning our attention, Dale, to you, I want to talk a bit more about these global marketplaces. On the fundamental front, what are your worries going into this year, and what are the bright spots?
The worries? What's the weather going to be? That's always the worry when you get into the thing at this point. You know, the other concern I have, you know, when I look at the beans in particular, I was looking at a spreadsheet I keep that's got the three major exporters in it broken down into a six-month base for timing purposes. And I can see a possibility that by the time we get to the end of our marketing year, bean supplies out of the three major exporters, whether you're measuring stocks, but in particular stocks to use, may be no bigger than they were last summer. And, you know, you look at that, you look at some of the subtle data coming out of China, you kind of get the idea that, you know, with the price structure they had to deal with the tariffs thrown on U.S. beans last year, they might have gone through a bigger destocking scenario in beans than what we generally believe at this point. And everybody's looking at the low exports and worried about African swine fever, et cetera. But, you know, the African swine fever may not be as big of an issue as what people think. Meanwhile, if they've had a big destocking, that's kind of hidden consumption. And what happens now with low prices if they decide, and as well as the rest of the world, Brazil emptied out a pipeline, what happens to the market structure if, in fact, this pipeline gets refilled or needs to be refilled, which it probably does. And that's a demand that a lot of people are not thinking about today.
I think maybe I'd better turn to you as well, Matt Bennett. We've heard a couple of good things looking forward into the marketplace, ideas that there might be some higher prices in the offing. Are you as friendly to the market as what we've heard so far? And I won't characterize both of these as friendly yet, but at least there's some good news there.
Well, I think, you know, I'm not going to dispute a lot of what either guy said. I think whenever I look at the bean market, I'm probably a little more cautious than what I might be, you know, with regards to the corn market. I think much of what, a lot of people in the trading spectrum, if you will, are probably a little bit more friendly corn than what they might be soybeans. For me, whenever you look at our carry out here in the U.S. for soybeans, it's pretty tough to get terribly friendly to the market, at least for now. I have some concerns as well that given the price ratio that we're currently seeing, that maybe we haven't bought near as many acres of corn as what some people in the trade may have thought. And so, you know, if you do end up only losing 2 or 3 million acres of beans and you have any sort of a decent weather pattern again this year, I think it keeps a lid on prices. As far as corn's concerned, I think with the stocks-to-use ratio we have currently, if you would have soybean prices that we've been used to here the last couple, 3 years, it would be pretty easy to see the corn prices quite a bit higher than where we're at right now. And I'm saying closer to the high that we saw last year for D18 corn around 430. I think that would have been attainable, but we simply don't have that right now. So, you know, I hope that these guys are right and we see a fair amount of strength out of the bean market, because I think if that were the case, boy, I could definitely make a case for corn prices rallying substantially, especially if we don't get the acreage switch that some people are hoping for.
Well, that acreage number will be out at the end of the month of March. Of course, that depends on what happens in Washington. It is open at this point, and we will get a USDA report next week on Friday, February the 8th. It will contain all of those numbers that we were supposed to get in January, including the grain stocks report, the wheat seedings report. The WASDE numbers will be updated for the month of February, and the ending or the crop production final numbers as well. Del Durkles, anything that you think will change in that? And then can the grain stocks report set the tone still for the marketplace for the next month and a half, which is what usually happens?
Well, the production numbers always carry a risk and a bit of surprise with them, but the trade, because of all the private stuff that's out there, seem to be somewhat comfortable, you know, talking about yields being down a little bit on corn and beans production along with that. But to me, you know, the thing that the trade has been lacking in this period of the government being closed is this constant feed of anything having to do with the demand side of the mix. Whether you want to talk about the quarterly grain stocks number, which is always important, or whether you want to talk about today, we just got our first report on export sales themselves. So I think that things with the demand side are really what the industry has been lacking, what the industry's been needing, and maybe part of the reason these markets simply haven't had much willingness to move either direction, up or down.
That turns my attention to that five-year low volatility in the corn market that you mentioned, Sean Hackett. Can you see corn rallying along with soybeans potentially?
Well, I mean, the way we see things, we always try to take China out of the mix because we're never really sure how much corn or how much wheat or how much soybeans they actually have. It's a kind of a mystery and there's always speculation. But when we take the corn inventories outside of China, you know, we've been drawing down stocks for the last 2 years despite very, very large crops in the U.S. That says to me, you know, that if the soybean market catches a bid because we cut a trade deal and Chinese are going to buy much, much larger numbers of soybeans than we think, you know, the corn market really, in our opinion, can't really lose a whole lot of acres here without getting potentially into trouble should we actually have a year where maybe the weather's not quite as perfect. And one of these years, that's going to happen. And we know throughout history, statistics say eventually Mother Nature catches every country. Last year, it was Argentina. We had Europe in bad shape. We had Russia weather in bad shape. Sooner or later, the U.S. is going to have a less than ideal year. And if we cut acreage short on corn because soybeans jacked up too much, you know, that could really set the corn market into a price, a potential higher that we haven't really seen or had the potential for quite some time. So we really do think a soybean rally, if it's large enough, you know, could really change the mix pretty dramatically and allow the corn market to really potentially break out of this 50-year low in volatility and break out and do something higher and more than maybe what many people are thinking at this point.
Dale Durkles, on the corn and acreage ending stocks in the United States, this country has been, for as long as we can remember, the leading exporter of corn, and by far the largest crop on the planet, more than twice the size of the next crop. However, the Brazilians in their safrinha crop, while not all that big, have played a role in the export market. And I'm wondering whether that crop needs to be considered in the acreage considerations that we're thinking about. And I mean by the marketplace itself, rather than, you know, how many acres are in the United States. But is it the marginal acre now, or could it be playing the role of the marginal acre that the United States used to depend on in the ratio for corn and soybeans over time? Do you understand roughly the question I'm trying to get at?
I kind of get where you're coming at, you know, and as much as anything, you know, and to talk about a tack that Matt wanted to get off on in talking about the acreage, but the Brazilian crop, you know, I mean, when you look at acreage this coming year, and I'm talking about acreage here in the U.S., I have to go back to 1983 to remember a year when, looking forward, I am so uncertain about what the planting mix is going to be. I mean, it is wide open for a lot of reasons. One of those, which is, what about the second crop corn in Brazil? And that's really a huge item. Their first crop is just short of 30 million ton on a good year. But their second crop, if it's a good year, is over 60 million ton. And by and large, the second crop is their export crop. So, you know, what happens with the production of the second crop corn impacts market structure and impacts prices, just as our farmers are going to the field and plant the crop here. So if something would be a problem for the second crop corn, and you know you've already seen some talk here in the last 2 to 3 weeks about it because of this dryness we've had over the last 40 to 60 days down there about, you know, what kind of second crop corn are we going to have this year, because they do depend upon getting off to a good start before they end up turning into the dry season at the end of their growing period itself. So if something happens there, it stays dry, markets move up, yeah, it quickly impacts, you know, what the planting mix here in the U.S. may be. And, you know, when you look at it, the beans, what happens with the China agreement? How does that impact bean prices? But the other overriding thing, which Matt and I particularly understand and know, we had a lot of stuff that didn't get done last fall in terms of tillage and fertilizer application, which means that I have a lot of acres out there that's wide open to getting planted at anything. They aren't committed anyway. So how the whole price picture unfolds here over the next 2 to 3 months is going to have a big impact on what kind of acreage mix we end up with.
Hey, Matt, I do have a question about that, because you've traveled a lot. I suspect you've heard about anhydrous ammonia not going on in many places, maybe some tillage not being done. But did fall fertilizer get down? I mean, did the DAP get put on locking some of those acres in?
Yeah, I mean, as far as dry goes, I mean, in essence, I guess the adage most people would fall back to with dry is that you're not necessarily locking those acres in the corn, because that fertilizer isn't necessarily going to go anywhere. And so, a lot more fertilizer from the dry perspective was able to get put on. But as far as anhydrous goes, our part of central Illinois probably got as much on as anybody. And you talk to co-ops, and most of those guys are going to tell you we were lucky to get 25% on of what we normally see. And so I'm going along with Dale here. Whenever you get into the state of Iowa or Nebraska or the Dakotas, Minnesota, you know, a lot of those guys, it was a well-known fact that they had a very late fall and a very wet fall. So not only in a lot of areas do you see some rutted up fields, but you weren't able to get the tillage done to fix those issues, first of all. And second of all, I mean, yes, they do like to plant corn, but I think that I'm like Dale, I think you're going to need to see either some sort of a plummet in bean prices or a really good move in the corn market to be able to get guys excited, not only to pay higher fertilizer costs whenever you're looking at anhydrous. You know, for instance, just from last fall, we're seeing $100 to $150 a ton higher for anhydrous price than what guys paid there during right after harvest. And so, you know, you're going to have to get guys excited about putting the anhydrous on, first of all, and second of all, the weather's going to have to cooperate in a major way.
Yeah, so I'm going to stop here just for a moment and do kind of a commercial, because I've been following the anhydrous application and the recommendations coming out of the university system pretty closely. Again, I generally do. If you've not used the MRTN, that's the online in-rate calculator. Just look up in-rate calculator, and it'll allow you to put in your county, what you expect your price will be, what your yield is, and it'll pop out the anhydrous ammonia, or a number of pounds of N, not anhydrous ammonia, just the N rate that will give you the best opportunity to maximize your income from that field. Generally speaking, and you'll need to check this, but in the upper two-thirds of Illinois, and it doesn't vary a lot, it's somewhere between 175 and 185 pounds of N in total. So you take off, you know, 40 pounds or 20 pounds for the dry fertilizer in the fall. So if you start to think about that, your cost might come down pretty good. And if you don't want to do it, because I know you're probably putting more than that on, do one round that way and then check it with the yield monitor, because it clearly the number of field trials that have been done in Illinois in particular have been extraordinarily large, and this is just where it comes out. But in-rate calculator might be something that can save you some money. I'll get off my high horse now. It's also part of the nutrient loss reduction and keeping nitrates out of the water system and other things. So just take a moment and check that. I'll turn my attention back to Sean Hackett. You've been listening to this conversation about corn and about acreage. Anything that you want to add in at this time?
We follow weather from a little bit of a different perspective. We kind of looked at a lot of historical work on solar cycles, what happens when we're at troughs, when sunspots are low and high. Right now we're in the low point of the solar cycle, meaning that we have very few of any sunspots in place. And typically when we are in that place, the last time we were in that phase was 2009 to 2012, and really that's the last time we had any really bad weather in the United States. And our work suggests that as we move forward over the next 1 to 3 years, that our weather is going to get progressively more challenging. And the reason for that is that typically that's when you move into what's considered the more of the La Nina Pacific sea surface temperature differential phase. La Ninas are always historically increased the odds of very, very poor weather entering the United States versus other countries. And when we have more of an El Nino like we've had the past year, other countries get into more trouble like we've seen, and the U.S. continues to be fairly good. So we think we're entering into this period where weather volatility for the U.S. specifically is going to be more challenging, and that presents itself, presents a problem for acreage in terms of how much do we actually get planted versus how much we say we're going to get planted. And one thing I'm thinking about, we all have experienced this polar vortex, or I haven't experienced it, but we've been hearing about the polar vortex. And one of the features of one of these trough periods is that the spring begins late, the winter ends late. And you always worry that if we have another late-ending spring, late-ending winter and late-starting spring, that corn acres potentially could be compromised. And so when we think about all of that, we think that, and I agree with both of the other analysts, that the corn acreage thing is very much in play and wide open and could be much more difficult to increase than many have thought just a couple of months back.
Hey, Matt, you mentioned that you were wondering what purchases China might make and what difference that would make if a deal is struck. I was reading some information on Thursday that the president is using some unique verbiage at this time, talking about the deal with China. Of course, China sent one of their top negotiators to the United States this week. Everybody saw that as a good sign. The president is now saying, if we don't get a big deal, we'll postpone it for a while. That's some new language from him, and he's not willing to do what he considers a little deal. So what's your thought about China at this point and its ability to purchase from the United States and what its mix might look like?
Well, I think it's a foregone conclusion. Everyone kind of feels that both countries really need this to happen. I saw that he put some different stuff out there today. One of it was an error in that he said they were going to purchase 5 million tons per day of soybeans, which I think that would clean us out in a week or two. But, basically, I think he was trying to say maybe 5 million tons here today. But regardless, how much can they purchase? I am a little bit concerned. I think the Chinese have been showing us that they want to lessen their reliance on us as much as possible. They've been planting a few more acres of soybeans the last couple of years than corn, I think, in an effort to do so. But I think we would all agree on here that they're going to need corn as well on down the line. with the kind of increase that they've had in consumption of corn. So, you know, I think overall they're going to be able to import a fair amount of soybeans if we get some sort of a deal struck. But I'm not going to get real excited unless there's some sort of guarantee in there, because, you know, we probably got plenty of soybeans this year. I don't think that there's any way that they're going to be able to get us down to the carryout levels that we've been used to here the last few years. I just hope we see some sort of guarantee.
Yeah, so the Chinese, Dale, have been toying with their own internal corn numbers, showing us in November a huge increase in what they said their stockpiles were, and then turning around just recently and saying, well, we'll use all of that up by the end of the marketing, what would be the end of the Northern Hemisphere marketing year. What's your assumption here, if anything?
You know, the one thing you have to understand about those Chinese revisions of corn numbers, they did it about 10, 15 years ago. They do a census about every 10 years down there, in which they get a more accurate counting of what's out there that the government didn't even know about. But the important thing in the Chinese corn revisions that we had here this last winter was that they also included in a couple of their quote-unquote states, provinces, whatever you want to call them, that they hadn't included before. And I think that probably got people's attentions, that had a fairly significant impact in boosting their production and stocks numbers. But, you know, it was just something new and fresh. It's always been there, so I don't think it's really a big concern. As far as the negotiations with China are concerned, you know, I've just learned at this point you take it a day at a time and you don't try to read ahead into the mix. And the only thing I really saw here today of value out of the talk about the Chinese negotiations is that March 1 deadline that's been hanging out there may not be as hard and fast as what people think, because there was some illusion that if good progress is made and there is potential that those tariffs may not be increased from 10% to 25%, like the threat that's hanging out there. But on the downside, we still seem to be having difficulty making progress in terms of intellectual property theft and also economic barriers to doing business in China. So I just play it carefully and try to not get too excited one way or another.
Sean Hackett, one final question for you before we get to some final thoughts from each of you. You talked a little bit about the algorithms that you use. We hear about the commitment of traders. I've heard you talk about that just a bit before and how it relates to those kind of capital flows. Where are they making their bet on this prospect at the moment? Do you have an idea?
Well, unfortunately, when the government closed, we stopped getting them for a little while. We were going to start to get them again starting on Friday, and then we're going to get two reports every week until they get current. It's kind of like the USDA, you know, they haven't reporting it. But let's put it this way: prior to them shutting the government down, the biggest bets were in soybeans and bean meal, secondary was wheat, and actually corn was the least bullish from a smart money perspective. It's exactly opposite of what the current perspective is by most people in the market. In fact, we had a major buy signal in late September, and then when the secondary low came in late October, we got another buy signal despite, you know, the massive bearishness that was out there at the time because of the large U.S. stocks and such forth. So we continue to see the smartest people in the world betting on much higher soybean prices, and at this point, not as much on corn. And I'm not sure why that's the case. We never know why the smart money does what they do, but we do know how to measure them. But if there's some reason that's got them more bulled up in the grain, in the soybean complex right now than in the corn complex. And we're looking forward to getting some of the more current data to see if we need to fine-tune that a little bit, or that still remains to be the case. So
let's get a final word from each of you for the afternoon. I think we'll start with you, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
Well, I think there's going to be a whole lot that is going to happen here. You know, obviously in the next week, we're going to get a ton of information through this data dump from the USDA. In my opinion, the producers need to keep close tabs on what's going on here. I don't want to enter into volatile times like this without some sort of offers in place, if those offers are at levels that you feel like you can make some money. At the same time, I'm still fairly friendly or supportive at the very least to corn. I'm not getting in a terribly large hurry, but I certainly would have more offers in place personally whenever I'm looking at this soybean market moving ahead here in the next couple weeks.
Dale Durkles is with AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Your final thought?
You know, the one thing I go back, and it kind of ties into something Sean talked about early with the Brazilian real, also a currency that goes along with that that looks like it's wanting to break out, is the Russian ruble. Meanwhile, the dollar looks like it wants to break lower, but all that fits hand in hand with the possibility that the low we put in commodity indices right at the beginning of the year was a three-year low, as well as being a semi-annual low. And it doesn't take too much to really confirm that the trend in those has turned up, which argues that generally commodity prices are getting ready to move higher.
And finally, Sean Hackett, who's the president of Hackett Financial Advisors out of Boca Raton.
Yeah, I think that the message I want to convey is volatility expansion. And that volatility expansion means that the markets are going to start to move around more as we move through the various phases of weather, China, and everything else, currencies. And moving markets means more opportunities if you're prepared. And we also want to dovetail what was just said about kind of the cycles and things. The U.S. dollar has a very reliable eight-year cycle since we came off the gold standard in the early 1970s, from high to low and low to high. The actual high of that cycle was early 2017, when we made the actual high in the U.S. dollar, suggesting that we're actually in a longer-term bear market construct for the U.S. dollar. And so should that confirm out and we are actually in a more of a bullish environment for overall commodities, then the prices that we have been seeing will be elevated relative to the fundamentals. And we think that's an opportunity for farmers to have greater opportunity and greater and put some greater equity into their businesses than they've had in quite a few years, and we're excited about the prospects of seeing that play out.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can buy your tickets for the All Day Ag Outlook. They're just $30. The All Day Ag Outlook is Tuesday, March the 5th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel C, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, and Sean Hackett of Hackett Financial Advisors. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.